Welcome to another episode of Innovation Odyssey. Today I have with me Heinrich Terborg, all the way from across the pond in Mexico, actually Mexico City. He is the co-founder at Marain and a co-founder at Solar 180. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Thanks, Renu.
How are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm good. I'm good. It's the good time of the year. Everyone is calming down. So that's very good for all of us to recalibrate, I think. Don't you think so?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always busy seasons if you are in entrepreneurship. And it's just good to not have that many meetings this time.
I know. You can actually sit back and reflect on what you have achieved.
Yeah, that's a good way of pointing it. That's true. And
did I get it right that you are in Mexico City?
Yeah, I'm in Mexico City. I actually live here, but we are doing business all over Mexico and also in the US. So, yeah, but we are just based here where the weather is nice.
I don't blame you. So this gives me a great opportunity to ask you, who are you and what do you do?
Well, I'm actually a physicist, and I did a PhD in complex systems. So I was doing everything to become a professor and a researcher in academia. But at some point, I just decided to turn my way around and start doing businesses. So I just became an entrepreneur in technology-based startups.
So a physicist turned entrepreneur.
Yeah. So that's, the best way to describe it.
Well, I call myself an economist and entrepreneur, so I understand. And what do you do with, because you mentioned, I mean, I introduced you as two startups. What do each of them do? And what is your role in them?
Yeah, so it started everything with Solar 180. So Solar 180 is essentially what we call an EPC, which is engineering, procurement, and construction startup for solar panels and battery systems. So it's just a renewable energy related startups. We essentially just install solar panels and batteries. But since this industry is let's say it's becoming more and more mature every day, we just found that there were still some opportunities for improving with software and some artificial intelligence, which is when we started Marain. So Marain is actually a joint venture, but it's more like a spin-off from Solar 180. So it's like the technology side from Solar 180, where we actually do everything related with forecasting energy production, forecasting failures, and making all the control systems and software for the batteries and the solar panels.
So are the clients of Marain also the clients of Solar 180?
So at the beginning, yes, that was the point. So actually, it's like Solar 180 was the main client of Marain. So we were just like providing for ourselves. And since we were doing software to optimize maintenance and to optimize installation of solar panels, we were buying our own product. But with time, we just found that that there's more and more the need for this kind of products to other companies like Solar 180. So that's when we decided, let's make this a spin-off. And so we started to provide this to other installer and to other, it's called operations and management companies that just make sure that all the solar panels are working properly. Nothing should be burning. Nothing should be going wrong. So,
and Your main market is the US?
No, it's so our main market, we expected it to be Mexico. Mm-hmm. It turns out it's being more and more Europe, mm-hmm. but the company is based in the US. So.
Okay. Why Europe? Is it just that the trends for energy, renewable energy use are much more evident or strong in the Europe?
Yeah, so it's because it's more mature. So we are not in the need of evangelizing a lot of the products. So it's like it's very clear for them that what we are improving is actually something they want and they need. So their investments pay off on time and give the expected returns. So in Mexico, it's still less mature. So the kind of products we can provide in Mexico are still more of the base of the production, which has to do with planning what a solar installation would be, what kind of products could you use that last longer, and so on. But in Europe, it's more towards improving this last tiny bit, squeezing out the last tiny bit of improvement so you get every bit of energy you can.
But that means that you could plateau soon in Europe, huh?
Probably. I mean, that's something we are expecting. Mm-hmm. So that's also where we see in Europe, it's a more competitive market in that regard. What our aim is that during this time where we get to plateau in Europe, mm-hmm. we can develop the markets in Latin America.
Where in Europe do you have a strong presence?
Well, it's mostly in Spain.
Okay.
But that has to do because one of our co-founders, he's from Spain and he actually worked in the industry for a very long time. So,
don't you want to explore other big markets like France, Germany?
Of course.
Okay.
No, yes. Of course, we are trying to explore these markets.
Yeah.
So what is happening a lot is that the same companies we are talking to are just global companies. So we are just working our way towards one country, now expecting to pivot to the next country via the same global company. But it takes time. So every time you have something like a big investment in renewables, it's a very slow process. So it just takes a couple of years since you start pitching.
Yes. And are you funded for both?
Well, no, we are actually self-funded and we are growing organically. So we actually started, we are actively raising an investment round right now, but it's like nothing beats sales. So that's the main thing. So we are just keep selling and keep selling as much as we can. And so far in our companies, I mean, at least in the solar company, right now we are at a point where we are actually not being able to take more projects because of funding. So we are just looking, we have a pipeline, but we are just looking for funding to execute all these projects.
I see. And for funding, are you looking in Mexico or are you looking in the US?
No, we are looking actually, so it's, we're looking globally. Mm-hmm. So we're also looking in Spain because there's this big opportunity in emerging markets for renewable industry. So all the big companies that are pouring money into countries like in Europe, for instance, or in the US are still seeing like, hey, now we can achieve bigger margins and there's still a lot of untapped market potential in emerging markets. So we are looking for funding essentially as globally. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we are not limited to one country.
What does the competition look like for you in countries like India, China?
Oh, that's, we have very strong competition. So of course it depends. So we have this hardware side, which in the hardware, you always have competition, but, you are mostly competing locally because the competition needs to be there in order to install. So if if we are already in strong in a region, then we're fine. But in the case of software, which is marine, so we're facing very strong competition. So for instance, in India, we do have actually our strongest competitor right now is from India. So we had a very strong competitor previously in Austria, and then, but it was acquired by another company, so they slow them down, mm-hmm. which was good for us. So acquisitions are not always the best.
Yes.
But
yes.
That was very good for us. But now we're facing very strong competition from a company in India. And I mean, it's good because it's driving the market. So at least every time we do some improvement, we need to be watching what they are doing and making sure we always stay a step ahead.
When you launch or talk about your product, I mean, the link to preventing climate change is obvious. It's,
yeah,
right, we don't have to mention that. But do you ever specify certain achievements that your technology, both the hardware and the software, has done on that path?
Well, I mean, so far our strongest achievement is, of course, we are fighting climate change, and it's like a way of, I mean, I started with this kind of redeeming myself because I felt bad of all my carbon footprint. That was one of the main reasons. So I thought, okay, I'm not really like able to lower my carbon footprint. Let's do this with a business. So that was one of the main motivators. But right now, what we are also seeing is the way we are working and what we are doing, at least with Marine right now, is we pivoted into helping investors find fraud in their solar park investment. That's something we are right now doing. And in turn, this, once this becomes more, let's say, more ubiquitous, solar investment should be cheaper. So this is part of what we expect that we will provide to the industry. So in the sense like, hey, just a solar investment, you don't need to hire like a big team to make sure your solar park is running well, or you don't need to be an expert in solar energy. You just set up a software and you find the problems and you can even spot fraud. So in that case, we can let them know little time if their investment is paying off, which we expect will lower the barriers of entry for solar energy too.
Your clients are companies who currently offer renewable energy services products?
Well, that's where we started originally. So it was for companies like us. Like our software was like, hey, if you use our software, we are going to help you do your maintenance in a better way. So you will save some money by doing the maintenance. You can spot problems in the future. And a lot of these companies were just telling us, you know, we don't care. We're already making money and energy is being produced, so we don't care. And at some point, we just got a question from one of the investors who felt he was being victim of fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And we investigated that with the software. We spot fraud. It ended up in a lawsuit, a couple of millions. And yeah, that was a previous potential client we pitched who told us we don't need this. So right now, we're actually no longer talking to solar companies or companies doing the installation. We're talking to the investors that are financing solar parks. So you usually have like several steps. So you have the investor, you have the ones who build the park, and then you have the ones who maintain the park.
But then your market is quite niche, right?
It's very niche. Mm. What we feel is we have a tool that is very general, and we are tuning this tool right now with solar energy. We also extended it for batteries, but this tool for finding problems is what we believe is our biggest achievement, let's say, as intellectual property. And that is what we expect to run more and more into other industries, for instance, to find problems in electric motors and other kind of things. But it takes time to get there. So right now, as a startup, our niche is the solar energy industry, because that's what we know, that's what we do well, and that's how we can tune our product.
And how long have both of them been around?
Well, Solar 180 started a while ago, 2018.
Okay.
Marine started internally as part of Solar 180, but it started late 2019. So we started that area later, but we actually spun it off and made the company. We founded the company just a year ago. So it's both are very, very new.
And what is your role in both?
Sorry, you're right. I never answered that question. I'm leading Marine, so I'm actually the CEO. But as part of the group, I'm providing more the role of a CTO. So I'm defining the pace of what kind of technologies and paths we should follow, and trying to make all that are still research ideas and in general, everything that is still more theoretical, to find a way to get it into a useful product.
I mean, considering your background, it's a great spot to be in, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. So the problem is I always get drawn to that to that spot. So
I mean, why shouldn't you? There are not many people who do what you do in terms of like the background. So then if you found your area in the entrepreneurship world, that makes you special, and that's good.
Yeah, I guess so.
What was your PhD in physics in? You said it was complex systems?
Complex systems, it was transport systems. So how, in this case, it was related to how traffic jams build and how you can change the roads or change the rules of moving vehicles. So really cars moving, building a traffic jam. What kind of rules could you set so you dissolve the traffic jams more easily, and more about every system where you have a lot of agents interacting one with each other.
Sounds to me a lot like an OR topic rather than a physics topic.
Well, it's closely related to, I mean, complex system is a very, how you say, so it's a discipline that is not, it's very multidisciplinary, actually. So there was a bit of people who were doing simulations for economic systems. And I mean, there's always the trend that physicists believe they have already a model that should work, and why not try it out? And more times than not, the model doesn't work.
No, that's actually interesting. I've talked to a lot of physicists, but I think this particular one, it's a new one for me. So that's quite interesting. And I must say that your name is not very Mexican. I know we talked about it before, but what brings you to Mexico, and where are you, for your family originally from?
Well, I'm half Mexican and half German. So my family from Germany came to Mexico. So it was my father. He was doing his PhD. So he came to Mexico because he's a sociologist. And actually, so I had an uncle in Mexico who was doing his master's with the same advisor. So that's kind of, they knew each other. And now my family is in Mexico.
Do you have any ties to Germany? Do you go back maybe once in 2 or 3 years?
Oh, yeah. So I do have a lot of family in Germany. So I have strong ties with them. And yeah, I mean, so it's part of what I am is also the culture from both sides.
Can you speak German?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. But then that means that your company, you can probably expand it in Germany.
Yeah, of course. So, and actually, so with one of my co-founders, he started his career. So he's from Spain, but he started his renewable industry career in Germany. So we're still looking how we get to tap into that market. It's not so easy. It's a very competitive market there.
Yes, yes. I mean, I know, but like you have some advantages of being actually speaking German.
Yeah, well, I would say it's not just the language. It's more on the, being an entrepreneur is mostly on trying to improve yourself. So you need to try to find where your blind spots are and what you are doing wrong. And looking back at you is always very difficult. I actually felt I had an advantage by growing up in two cultures, because it always lets you think what you are doing in one culture is not the same as you do it in the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes you always back to take a look or try to look at yourself from a different perspective. And I believe that's not the language, but that is what was the biggest advantage in my case.
Is there any particular example that you think about how you're, because this is so interesting, right? It's not, obviously there's the language, but there's also how you approach things. I can see it in the places I lived. Is there anything specific that calls you?
Well, I wouldn't say really anything specific. It's more like it lets you look at the small things that you are doing without thinking that at some point it's like, okay, so why am I doing this way? Is this really the only way you could do it, or is there a different approach to this? So it's more on small things. So I can't really think of one particular example. It's mostly on the way you approach people or on the way you approach clients when you see it's not working. So why is it not working? So why I'm not getting it? Why I'm not getting the message right to the other end? So that kind of things is what I believe is the best. And yeah, also to find problems in your own company, which you always have.
And I want to, looking at your profile, I want to assume that SolarBlocks is not your first company. There's been...
Oh, no.
Which company is it?
Oh, no, it's no longer even there. So, I mean, it started... During the PhD, I actually started a company with another friend who was also doing his PhD, and it was a company about computer vision for video surveillance systems. So that was 2007. Early 2007. So we were doing that, and that was actually our first startup at the It was a real mess. So because we both had like a scientific background, so we were very good at the technology, but so bad at business. So bad at business. So we just we are happy because the end, one of our biggest customers, we just helped them. We caught a thief on camera, and our system worked perfectly. So he kind of forgave us all the mistakes we did in the past, but it was very hard. And after that startup, we tried a lot of things. So still together, at some point, he no longer wanted to do business, essentially. So he wanted to just go back to academia and become a researcher. And but to me, it was like I kept doing this. So a lot of times failed before. After that, I tried to do another company that was related to digital signatures for invoicing. That failed too miserably. So I had to take a 9-to-5 job after that. After that, I tried again because I was not so happy at having a 9-to-5 job. So I tried again a company for, we were selling, computer clusters to universities. So for doing high performance computing, very, very tech oriented and very fine tuned systems just for number crunching. And after that is when we just decided, like, hey, you know, we are doing like something wrong. We are selling, we're trying to sell products that are very high end and that are very niche products. So at that point, we decided, like, let's rethink this a bit. So we went to something basic. So what is what you always need is energy. It doesn't matter if you are in a recession, if you are, if it's going good, you need more energy. If you are in a recession, you still need energy. And that's when we decided, well, let's try something with renewables. We came in touch with a lot of people in the industry. And so we ended up meeting our current partners, and that worked just great.
How long has been your entrepreneurial career?
Oh, that's 16 years so far. Well, if I have to discount probably 6 years, I had the 9-to-5 job.
Okay. So, ooh, 6 years is hard.
Well, it was at the central bank. So if you quit early, it's like it looks bad on your resume. Let's say it that way.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I started mine in 2017, and anything that is not entrepreneurial, it's like putting me in a cage.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and yeah, you know, you just have to say, no one puts baby in a corner.
Absolutely. No, I can completely relate to that.
And do you have, like, you know, do you have like a group of people that you say, okay, I want to start something, these are my go-to people?
Yes, absolutely. So over the years, you always get to know people. So, I mean, it's hard, but getting the right people is always the hardest part. So, yeah, it's, over the years, it's like you know who's your go-to person for tech, who's your go-to person for blockchain, who's your go-to person. You start, you start finding people. And sadly, it's always not straightforward, because you find them after you fail a lot of time, after you put all your faith in someone. And yeah, well, you learn from that.
And what? Because this is also a theme for me, and I am a single founder, and for one venture and the other one not, and third one. So I am in a bit of a debate of, you know, do I want to do whatever it is that I do next alone? And it's a little bit of like, if people disappoint me, I don't take it personally. That's not mm-hmm. there. But then it's, you know, then you kind of went to the next one. You do it yourself and you hold it to your heart. Is that how you are as well?
No, I guess that's mostly how I was. But so it was like I had a couple of people I believe I could trust, mostly because these were very technology intensive products. But in the end, I always ended up like, oh, no, I need to do all this myself. I need to do to take care of the client. I need to take care of everything. Mm-hmm. And then you start feeling that you are burning out.
Okay.
And mostly is what I feel is you, it's very easy to blind yourself and to believing that you are on the right path. And if you have like the right partners, they always ask you something that makes you look back and think like, yeah, maybe this is not the same. Mm-hmm. Or maybe this is not the right way of doing it. But what I also found is that there are people which resonate a lot with you. So my main partner, we are very alike in the way of thinking, and we are very alike with taking risks. And so if we were alone in the company, we probably were bankrupt by now. Mm-hmm. But since we have more partners that have a more risk-averse personality, or more like, hey, no, look at the financials. We cannot do this right now. We need to wait for the next quarter and then plan a bit. So it's like this kind of a team is what is working for me. So because sometimes I feel alone, you are a lot in control, but you also are blinded to your own. You don't see your own blind spots.
Okay. That's That's interesting. I mean, I would think that if you start two or three things, then you kind of, you blind spot.
Like, yeah, of course. They do it. So it's at that point is when you learn, like, wow. So it's painful. Yeah. Always yeah. Depends how hard you hit yourself. But,
yes, which is not always in your control, really.
It's not always in your control. And that's actually why I ended up in a 9-to-5 job. So that was the time I was trying to do everything by myself. And it failed miserably. So that's when I decided, okay, let's slow down and try to do things.
Okay, I mean, I am really encouraged by your relentless entrepreneurial attitude. It's very encouraging.
Well, at some point, at some point you start asking yourself, what are you trying to get out of this? So why are you doing this? And you might think it's about the money, it's about doing something big or just for the thrill of it. But at some point, that's something I just felt like the last 3 years, I started enjoying the process of improving myself. Like, I'm not doing the same mistakes. I still do a lot of mistakes, but I'm still not successful as an entrepreneur. But I'm enjoying the process of doing better, planning better, making better strategies all over. So also being, getting the most out of people, in the sense, like, in the past, I would just, so this employee is not working, let's look for someone else. So right now I'm also trying to finding the thrill in maximizing what people can do. So this process of improvement is what I'm enjoying a lot. And this is actually what I lack a lot in a 9-to-5 job. So that's what I'm starting to enjoy.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for that. That's also it's a new perspective for me.
Well, it's, you will hit yourself. It's going to be hard. It's going to be painful. Yeah. But at some point you just start, I wouldn't say it sounds a bit masochistic, but you start enjoying this because you learn from that.
Oh, no, I get it. It's self-flagellation.
Yeah, that's not the point. You don't want to harm yourself. You want the opportunity for improvement. And it's nice once you see. So something that really inspired me is one of our competitors in Spain. We were trying to work together, and this guy was the CEO of a business, a very seasoned entrepreneur, and he took a meeting with us. So we are just a very small company compared to someone who is already in the hundreds of millions of revenue just by providing this kind of services. Guy is 100 times bigger than us. And he took a meeting with us, just very nice. He was very open. It was very clear that we were competing against each other, but what he told us is it's very important to always learn from everyone, because you never know when you are up, the ones that are down, it could shift the next day. So, and that kind of lesson, like, even those who are at the top, if they came there with all the struggle, they know that they could be at the bottom the next day. Yeah. And it was just such a humbling session with him, because it's someone very humble, a very seasoned entrepreneur that you really feel he has been through a lot, and that he was so kind and so just so honest with let's build relationship, because maybe you are on top tomorrow and I might need your help. So it was, to me, like, I want to be like this guy.
That is very to the point, because really, you know, entrepreneurship, at least for me, is a very humbling experience.
Oh, yes.
You know, you think you know some things because you've done your education and you've traveled or whatever, and then you start something, and then you realize that you have to start from the alphabet.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's great. So I guess that's, and probably if you know more physicists, physicists tend to have a very high ego.
Yes.
So they also feel they are at the center of the world, and we have so many center of the world as physicists. So I think entrepreneurship is the cure for that. Thank you for that.
I second that. And this gets me to this. I have this conversation with each of my guests, which is, do you consider yourself an entrepreneur or an innovator?
Ah, that's a tricky one. So I'm still are a bit of both. And I could say that I was more of an innovator. I still are. So I get drawn by new ideas or new ways to do things. So it's like I cannot help it. I just need to go and look into that. So it's I can't. But I'm trying, and that's my personal way of improvement. I'm trying to become every time more business savvy and trying to become more of an entrepreneur. So for me, the journey has been more from being an innovator to becoming an entrepreneur. That's mostly because an innovator, it's fine, but there are so many good ideas that could have been tremendous business, but I just couldn't execute them. So.
And maybe on that kind of note, what is your outlook for the industries that you're currently involved in for the next 2 to 3 years?
Right now, I would say it's a very good outlook because the market is growing. So we just need to be very bad to perform under the market. That is something I also learned from previous businesses that we were fighting against the market, and that's always hard. So this time we are better prepared and also on a better industry. So it looks good. We are trying to bring this unique combinations of software and hardware together. So, I mean, by hardware, I mean the solar panels and the battery, but also very sophisticated software that lets us tune the very last beat. So we can actually use this uptrend that is coming to position ourselves way better than our competitors. So our competitors are mostly looking just at one or the other. And we are trying to get the full vertical. I would say that so far the outlook is good. We hope, of course, to perform way better than the market. Mm-hmm. But at least this time we know we cannot miserably fail that bad as with other businesses.
Is there any tech trend that you see, say, in the next 5 years that you want to bring into your current business? Maybe not now, but maybe 6 months or 1 year later. Is that really like the... I can't call it the moonshot, but it has a moonshotish feeling. Is there anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and it has to do with all my previous past. And of course, there's AI, but and by AI, I'm generative AI. But that is something we have been doing already because that is, otherwise we wouldn't be competitive. So if we don't do it, that's not like the moonshot we expect. But what we are looking forward is actually to more Internet of Things. So, and this is particular for this industry. And it sounds strange because that was a buzzword from, I believe, almost 6 years ago. So that was a very old buzzword. But right now what we are trying to do is to make our installers, and the people that go actually and install everything, a bit more intelligent. But I'm not talking about human intelligence, but for instance, let's say they go out and they need to take a wrench and put a certain amount of pressure on a few couplings. If they don't do it right, they might break them. If they do it too poorly, then the whole installation could fail. So we are actually looking into getting sensors everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, also since the wrench, get all the data from that. So it sounds, again, very bad, like 2010 when big data was a thing. Mm-hmm. But those are technologies that are becoming more mature, mm-hmm. and it's becoming cheaper to do it this time. And what we expect is that we can start this problem of right now the improvement we do is by looking at the people, thinking ourselves, doing what we are doing, but trying to get more and more data from people that are doing stuff in the field, computer vision, so even with GoPros, get that information back, and now becomes a digital problem which we can iterate way faster than before. So that's what we expect is going to be our biggest improvement and what we are looking forward to do. So I know this was a thing 10 years ago, but maybe the technology is just more mature.
Right? Yeah, and maybe the timing is actually right to do this now, to attempt to do this.
Because
10, I know when we're talking about big data, it was such a cloud-like thing, you know, for the companies.
Yeah.
It was so there. Now with Gen AI and all the other things that has happened, this has become more palpable. So, and you spoke a magic word, which I love, which is data, which is basically getting the data from the people who do this and training it to do it better. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So what we want to do is take problems from the real world and convert them into a digital problem, because once it's a digital problem, you can iterate faster. That's what we hope to achieve. If let's see what kind of problems we face with that.
I would say that you would face a lot. You will have a lot of success.
Oh, yeah.
And the problems are by the side. We'll deal with them when they come. But that's a great end for the podcast. Thank you very much. It's very inspirational talking to you. And I want to thank you for your time in speaking with me.
Thank you. It's a very nice time talking to you.